If you've spent much time on YouTube, you've probably come across one of the more popular video genres, interspecies friendships. Bubbles the elephant and Bella the dog are dear friends in South Carolina. Videos of the 9,000-pound behemoth playing in the water with her little friend have racked up almost 4 million views. Similarly, the heartwarming story of Shere Khan the tiger, Baloo the bear, and Leo the lion has touched the hearts of millions on YouTube. They were rescued from their owner, an abusive drug dealer. Now the three fearsome animals are a loving family living together in an animal sanctuary. Foxes and cats, dogs and owls, gorillas and kittens, the examples of these unlikely friendships go on and on. One of the more peculiar interspecies friendships is between humans and wild animals. Over 10 million people have marveled over the video of an emotional reunion between a lion and the men who raised him. Their story begins in England. London in the 60s was a wild place to be. Things got even wilder for two party-loving Australians when they adopted a lion. In 1969, John Rendell and Anthony Burke were shopping in a luxury department store when they came across a 3-month-old lion cub in a tiny cage. Seeing a young lion in such a confined space upset them. They wished to right this wrong. They purchased the lion and named him Christian. The two friends raised him as if he were their child. He wasn't. Christian was a wild animal, yet this king of the jungle was surprisingly well-behaved. Caring for Christian was hard, but rewarding. The young lion appeared happy in their London apartment. He ate steak, and like a house cat, he used a giant litter tray as a toilet. And they walked him in the local churchyard like a dog. But was Christian really suited to live a domestic life? After a year, John and Anthony decided the answer was no. They flew Christian to Kenya. A lion conservationist introduced Christian to the land of his ancestors. The pampered pet returned to a more natural life in the wild. A year later, the two friends returned to Africa. In a touching reunion caught on camera, Christian clearly remembered his surrogate parents. John explained, "He ran towards us with such love and excitement in his eyes." Neither time nor environment could break the bonds between man and lion. Englishman Damien Aspinall experienced a similar relationship with a gorilla named Queeby. Growing up on an English estate, which was also an ad hoc wildlife sanctuary, Damien saw nothing of his absent mother and little of his neglectful father. His emotional support came from the wild animals who lived on the estate. Damien explained, "When I was a little boy, all the animals lived in the house with us." Damien eventually took over his father's conservation organization, the Aspinall Foundation. The group breeds gorillas and returns them to the wild. Damien forged a special friendship with a gorilla called Queeby, who was returned to the African jungle when he was 5. 5 years later, Damien visited the jungle hoping to find Queeby again. It was a dangerous journey. The 10-year-old male gorilla had been living in the wild for half a decade. Would he remember Damien? If he did, would he be hostile or welcoming? Queeby not only recognized Damien, he greeted him with hugs. Damien explained, "He looked in my eyes with such intensity and such love, I knew that I'd be okay." In a video recorded during their reunion in the African jungle, Damien passes leaves from his mouth to Queeby's. The gorilla could easily kill the much weaker Damien, but instead tenderly wraps his arms around his old friend and holds him gently. Stories like Queeby and Christian's appeal to people because it hints that love knows no boundaries. If we can build bonds between different species, perhaps there is hope for us. After all, the most dangerous animal to humans is our own fellow humans. Stories of tribalism and oppression of our human brothers and sisters can be found in all cultures. The United States, for example, was built on the backs of slavery. While slavery officially ended in 1865, its legacy still casts a shadow over American society. Bill Wilkinson looks no different than any other old white man. He seems good-natured and keen to crack a joke. He lives in a majority black town and gets on well with his neighbors. Yet, you shouldn't judge a book by its cover. Bill was once an imperial wizard in the Ku Klux Klan. The Ku Klux Klan is a racist group in the U.S. that dates back to the end of slavery and has a history of terrorizing black people. and an Imperial Wizard is the highest position within this notorious group of thugs. Indeed, at one time, Wilkinson was branded the most powerful white supremacist in the world. Bill disappeared from the U.S. in the 1980s and has been found in San Pedro, Belize. He now lives happily alongside the very people he once hated with a passion. He said he's no longer a racist and stresses, "I don't hate blacks. I never have hated blacks. I still don't hate blacks. I don't hate anyone." History tells a different story. For nearly 10 years, Bill served as Imperial Wizard of the Invisible Empire of the Knights of the KKK. From 1975 to 1984, Bill enjoyed stirring up racial hatred. He insisted all Klansmen should carry guns, knives, and clubs. He organized camps to train Klan members for a coming race war. He even brainwashed young children into the ways of the KKK. Wilkinson once told the Washington Post, "Race mixing, that's the highest sin you can commit, higher than murder." Bill now lives on an island with a mostly black, Mayan, and Hispanic population. Stranger still, he has many close friends among the non-white population. He runs a hotel, and the locals jokingly call him King of the Rednecks. Bill claims he now believes in brotherly love. Considering Bill's history, such a claim seems far-fetched. Can a leopard really change his spots? Should he be given a second chance to atone for past sins? Bill isn't too honest about his former life in the KKK. He insists he only joined the Klan to improve American schools. How? Through that tired old chestnut they call segregation. Bill explained, "After the schools became integrated, they started to have disciplinary problems. Black people got automatic promotions, whether they passed the grades or not. I joined the Klan and I did the best I could to find a solution to improve the schools." Strangely, considering his current location, Bill still believes in segregation. He describes himself as a Bible-bashing segregationist. He said, "I still believe in segregation. That's how it should be. God has commanded me not to mix with other races. I have not changed. I'm the same man I always have been. I wouldn't let a black person marry my children or my grandchildren." The irony is, Bill does mix with other races. He lives alongside them, but still cannot let go of the petty prejudice which poisoned his soul. A penniless San Pedro Rastafarian street artist named Kurt hit the nail on the head when it comes to the man he calls Mr. Bill. Kurt said, "I think of Mr. Bill as a friend, but a friend who can't see what is in front of his very nose. He speaks like we can't all live together, but he's living in a town where all the people live together." It takes a mentally insane person to think like that. Insane or not, Bill is living in peace and friendship with the people, despite his sordid past and lingering prejudices. Could the brotherly love he claims to believe in be the thing that explains this irony? As the American author H. Jackson Brown Jr. once said, "Sometimes the heart sees what is invisible to the eye."